Hey guys, Rebecca here. Just wanted to give you a little heads up for the episode you're currently listening to. So unfortunately this week we weren't able to get into the recording studio to record an actual mini for you guys. There were just some extenuating circumstances that came up. So instead of giving you nothing, we decided we would just release episode 5 a little early. So that's why it's so long. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Hey guys, I'm Katie.
And I'm Rebecca.
And this is Chills,
Thrills,
and Kills.
All right, Katie, so I know you had a little bit of an announcement for everybody today.
Okay, so I know I'm aware that I sound pretty nasally, but I am currently having an allergic reaction. We will discuss why at the end of the episode. So, I'm aware that I sound nasally.
I mean, you sound fine to me, but
I can hear it in my headphones and it is driving me crazy.
Well, you sound lovely and you're lovely and I'm happy you're here.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so I guess we should just jump into this. And guys, as I promised in the Facebook group, this one is a real doozy. I initially looked at it. I initially discovered this episode on, what the heck's the show called? It's called Crimes That Shook Australia.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know how I feel about that show. I've only watched this one episode, but I feel like they left a lot of information out that was pretty pertinent to the case, solely so that they could do their little dramatizations, which I get it, it's television, but it just, I don't know. I wasn't thrilled with it after having to do hours of additional research, which I would have done anyways, do not get me wrong, but I don't know. I feel like leaving information out for the sake of being dramatic is just not cool. So, with that being said, here we go.
All right. I'm excited.
All right. I hope so. And I hope you haven't heard of it because I had not.
Okay.
So, Catherine Mary Knight was born on October 24th, 1955. Little Libra baby. Mm-hmm. Up until the age of 4, when her father passed away, she actually lived with him and her twin sister. Growing up, aside from this twin sister, the only person she really felt close to was her uncle, Oscar Knight, who committed suicide in 1969. To this day, she actually maintains that his ghost visits her.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't find anything else on that. It was just mentioned in every single article I found, and because of what we do, I felt that I needed to mention it.
Yeah, I think it was definitely worth mentioning.
I agree. So her father actually died when she was about 5 years old. But what has been said about him was that he was an alcoholic who openly used violence and intimidation to repeatedly rape her mother.
Okay, father of the year. Got it.
Yeah, husband of the year.
Mm-hmm.
This would sometimes happen up to 10 times a day.
Oh my God.
Which, like, what the fuck are you on? That is your stamina. Are you kidding? Aren't you tired?
Right. Good God.
I think we just lost all of our male listeners because they're like, these girls are boring.
Sorry, guys.
For those of you who don't see our analytics, we are predominantly listened to by females, and we have like a 13% male following. So.
Yeah, but we need you, so don't go anywhere.
Yeah, please don't go anywhere. We love you guys. So, as traumatic as all of that stamina probably was for Knight to witness, the real damage was probably done afterwards. During Knight's formative years, her mom would actually constantly overshare intimate details about her sex life and how she hated men and sex altogether.
Oh. okay.
Yeah, and having the mother that I do, I get it.
Poor thing.
No, she actually sent me a text message with a link to, like, a music video and was like, hey, this is a song that a guy wrote about spending a night in a hotel room with me. And I'm like, I don't need to know this.
Ew. Okay. Anyway.
Yep. So that's my mom, everybody. Anyways, she won't listen to this. She doesn't care when I talk about things I care about. So.
Mine's listening. Hey, Mom.
Hi, Katie's mom. Thank you. So, let's see. So, yeah, her mom would overshare because what kid doesn't love hearing about their mom's sex life? Ooh. Making matters worse, when she once told her mom about a partner wanting to commit certain sexual acts with her, she was told to put up with it and stop complaining.
Oh, no.
Despite the fact that she knew her daughter did not want to participate in this.
Okay. I can see this is going to be bad.
Yeah. So, Knight also claims that throughout her childhood, she was sexually abused repeatedly by several of her family members. While psychiatrists didn't necessarily believe that at first, confirmations from several family members caused the psychiatrist to accept her claims, but they still found some issues with, like, minor details.
Mm-hmm.
I found no information on what those minor details were. I looked. So with this kind of childhood, it's really no surprise that people reported Knight having a temper problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Weird. So as far as most people were concerned, growing up, she was a pleasant girl, but she would experience uncontrollable, murderous rages in response to minor upsets.
Oh, that sounds real pleasant.
I just... Most of my family would argue that I'm not a pleasant person, and I don't have a murderous rage, so I just want to know what kind of people she's been surrounded by that considered her pleasant.
That's probably a valid question, because...
Yeah.
So she's capable of pleasant murderous rage. Okay.
Yes, pleasant murderous rage. Fan title. As she grew older, she became more of a loner, and people no longer thought of her as pleasant. Instead, she was labeled a bully who would constantly tower over those smaller than her.
Sounds like a great girl.
Great girl. I don't know. High class. Want her as best friend. Katie, you're out. She's in. Make this happen. In high school, she actually assaulted one boy with a weapon, and on a separate occasion was injured by a teacher who, after investigation, was found to have acted out of self-defense.
Oh, see, I can't really speak on that. I had a violent phase in high school, so continue.
I did not, surprisingly. Oddly enough, Knight couldn't wait to leave school.
Oh, surprise.
She was actually so set on getting out of school that she left at 15 before she was even able to read or write properly.
What?
Yeah. I don't know why you weren't able to read or write by 15, but this is apparently a thing that existed. So.
Yeah. What grade were you in at 15 where you couldn't read or write? Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, that's high school.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Anyways, moving on. So, from school, she started her first job. It was at some sewing factory. She was a cutter, which, okay. She worked there for 1 year. And when she left this position, it was for her dream job. Katie, do you want to guess what her dream job was?
I think I know what it is. She had to be a high school counselor.
Absolutely. I was thinking actress or singer or even model, but no. No. She got an entry-level position at the local slaughterhouse.
Oh, that's my dream job, too. Oh, my God.
Apparently, by the way, slaughterhouses in Australia are called, I think it's abattoir or abattoir.
Oh, okay.
I heard that initially in the episode I was watching, and I was like, what the fuck is that?
Let's see. Okay.
Yeah, so that was interesting, and I just wanted to share that I have been educated, so thank you, TV. She was quickly promoted through the ranks, no surprise, and was given her own set of butcher knives.
Oh.
So these butcher knives were brought home with her each night, and instead of doing the obvious thing, like keeping them in a kit to bring to work the next day, or putting them in her kitchen, or literally anything other than what she did with them, she hung them above her bed.
Oh, home decor. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Got it. Cool. when asked about this design choice, she said she did this so that they would always be handy if she needed them.
Something tells me she's going to need them.
Yeah. I mean, she doesn't need them, but she chooses to need them.
Ooh, that's even better. Okay.
Yeah. So in 1973, Knight met her first partner, David Kellett, who was her coworker. The two had one of those relationships where he'd get rowdy in a bar and she'd be like, don't worry, babe, I got you, and beat the shit out of these people with him. So, interesting. Mm-hmm. They married only a year later upon Knight's request. And interestingly enough, on their wedding night, Kellett was warned about Knight by her own mother. Yeah, huh? She had said, you'd better watch this one or she'll fucking kill you. Stir her up the wrong way or do the wrong thing and you're fucked. Don't ever think of playing up on her. She'll fucking kill you. She's got a few screws loose. That's not sketchy at all.
Mm-mm. No, welcome to the family.
Welcome. Happy to have you. Don't die. Oh, also, I'm going to put a warning right here, right now, that this shit gets really, really detailed and gross. And it's just a big trigger if, I don't know, you're opposed to, like, gore or some animal harm.
Ooh, so that's my cue to leave. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't come up for a little while, but I remembered that I forgot to mention it at the beginning of this episode. So just adding that in now, keep that in mind. I will understand if you can't listen any further. Just skip ahead a bit to listen to Katie's part of the episode, because I'm sure it's going to be great.
Yeah, don't forget about me.
We could never. Okay, so lo and behold, after a few hours after this lovely warning from his new mother-in-law, Knight attempts to strangle her new husband because he wasn't able to perform sexually more than 3 times before passing out.
Whoa.
Yep. How dare you? Another night, while Knight was heavily pregnant with their first child, Kellett stayed out later than expected because he was playing darts in a competition where he'd actually made the finals. In response to this, she burned all of his clothing and shoes before hitting him in the back of the head with a frying pan.
Oh, well, that's not a bad response. Okay,
it's fine. Not even a little bit. Sounds totally reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, he fled to a neighbor's house where he immediately collapsed. He was later treated for a major skull fracture, because Knight was now on her best behavior, though, charges were never filed against her, even though police were like, what the fuck are you doing? Press charges.
Wow. So I guess Australia doesn't do like we do. Like, say you got assaulted by someone and you chose not to press charges against them. If the assault was severe enough, the state would press charges.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, that's interesting.
Apparently Australia does not, or at least did not, at the time that all of this happened. I have no idea what their legal system's like now. If you know, feel free to send us an email.
Yeah, do that.
Yes, do that, please. Also send in stories. We need them.
Mm-hmm. All the stories.
Back to our story. So, in 1976, after the birth of her first child, Kellett actually left her for another woman. So, you know, the thing her mom specifically warned him not to do.
Ooh.
And then moved to Queensland. Sorry. We have a listener who's now my friend who has been my Australian wordsmith. So, Queensland.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
Yes. Obviously, Knight did not take this well. She was seen violently pushing her child in the stroller along the street.
Oh.
So this quickly landed her a stay at St. Elmo's Hospital. She was released shortly after with a diagnosis of postpartum depression. Or she's just a crazy bitch, but you know.
Yeah.
So she quickly spirals again, and this time leaves her daughter in a stroller on a train track, just shortly before the train's scheduled to arrive.
What?
Yeah. Yep. Fortunately, a man known as Old Ted was foraging nearby and found the 2-month-olds before any harm could come to her. So thank you, Old Ted.
Yeah, way to go.
You're the real VIP. Meanwhile, Knight had made her way into town, stolen an axe, and threatened to kill several people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that little detail was left out of the show that I mentioned. So that's why I was like, this isn't, like, what?
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. So she was obviously arrested for this and taken back to the hospital where she, quote unquote, recovers and signs herself out just one day later.
Oh, what a quick recovery. Okay. Yeah,
totally fine. Just tried to kill some guys, but think I look cute today. Gonna take selfie.
Yikes.
A few days after this, she slashed the face of a random woman with one of her knives and demanded that this stranger drive her to Queensland to find Kellett.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah, so the woman manages to escape while they're stopped at a service station. But in the time it took police to arrive, Knight had already grabbed a young boy and was threatening him with her knife. Not because he could drive her anywhere or anything, but just because, fuck it, while I'm here.
This bitch is off her rocker.
She's off something for sure, like meds maybe.
Oh my god.
The police used brooms to disarm her, which little lesson to what's going on right now. But anyways, so they used brooms to disarm her and had her admitted to the Morissette Psychiatric Hospital. You're still just getting over the broom part.
Okay, so they just had a broom riot. All right, got it.
You know it's really bad. So there are several things in this story that make me think of the series The League.
Mm-hmm.
And so her getting hit with brooms just makes me think of when, I don't know if you've seen The League, but so when Andre, who's played by Paul Scheer, is doing trying to learn stand-up comedy. So he's at the end of it, he's like, you just got broomed. And I'm just, that's all that's in my head.
Oh my goodness.
The whole joke was he's really bad at comedy until he starts turning the whole audience against each other. And it's just great.
Okay, sounds good.
Ah, yes, it's lovely. Anyways, so moving on beyond that, back to this horrible, horrible, horrible story. After she's admitted to the Morissette Psychiatric Hospital, she actually admits that she had intended to kill the mechanic at the service station because he'd previously fixed her husband's car, allowing him to escape her.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. After doing this, she planned to then kill both her husband and his mother once she located them in Queensland.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. So despite this terrifying confession, she was actually released on August 9th, 1976, into the care of Kellett and his mother, who had moved back upon hearing about her mental breaks.
What? Moved back, like, to be with her?
Mm-hmm, to take care of her. They felt bad. But my thing is like, okay, this girl, if you look her up, and I will be posting photos of her once this episode releases, if you look her up, she was not that attractive. And, okay, guys, like, I'm a little bit crazy. I cannot find people this forgiving. Luke's pretty forgiving, but if I hit him in the head with a frying pan, he would not come back.
I mean, I would hope not. Good gracious. I'm getting, like, Eileen Wuornos vibes. I feel like that's what she looks like.
That's actually, I can't say whether or not that's a fair comparison. I'm really bad at comparing faces, but the vibes are accurate.
Yeah.
So they all moved to Woodridge, a suburb of Brisbane. In March of 1980, they had their second daughter because the one she tried to leave on the train tracks just apparently wasn't enough.
Oh, okay.
And in 1984, the relationship between Kellett and Knight officially ends when Knight decides to leave Kellett and returns to Aberdeen.
Wow, so all of that for nothing.
Yeah, she's allowed to leave. He's not.
Okay.
So their marriage somehow lasted 10 total years.
Okay.
Which is wild.
Mm-hmm.
So just 2 short years later, Knight meets David Saunders. He moved in with her and her 2 daughters a few short months after, though he did keep his apartment, which is probably the wisest decision he made out of all of this. At some point, Knight developed a serious case of FOMO for no reason and threw him out.
Okay, this... All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for those of you that don't know, FOMO is fear of missing out. So basically, mm-hmm. she was like, well, what are you doing when I'm not around? I need to know. I don't like it. Even though he wasn't doing anything, he was going to bars and doing what they were doing when they met. So, whatever. So he returned to his apartment in Scone until she inevitably asked him to come back. This, of course, was never in the form of an apology, but rather a simple, we should be together, come back.
Okay, because that's yeah. how you keep them. All right.
Yep. Everyone who knew Knight said that when she crossed a line, there was never a sign she felt any remorse.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Yeah. Now, here's the part where y'all need to brace yourself, because animals... In May of 1987, it got worse, as it does. She cut the throat of his poor 2-month-old dingo puppy in front of him as a demonstration. I know. As a demonstration of what she would do to him if he ever decided to have an affair.
Oh, this is just a little baby. What? I hate this bitch. Okay.
Yeah, I read that and I cried. I like dogs more than people.
Mm-hmm, same. Hence why so, I have 37.
You know, people are going to start to think you actually have 37.
I mean, who's to say I don't?
Fair point. I mean, I certainly wouldn't know. So, later when asked by police officers during an interrogation for, like, the real crime in this, when she was asked if the dog had died, she responded simply, they said it was a good, clean cut.
Oh my god.
Yep, true to psychopath form. She then, in all of her Rapunzel-esque glory, knocked him out with the frying pan after slitting the throat of his dog.
What is it with the fucking frying pan? Jesus Christ.
I mean, you could ask Medea. Apparently, it's a really good weapon.
Okay. Touche.
I am not ashamed to admit that I have watched those movies.
I have too. Several times, actually.
I enjoy them. Anyways, Saunders decided that with all of the abuse and mistreatment, something was missing. A child!
Oh my god.
So, in June of 1988, Knight gave birth to her 3rd daughter. It's at this point that the 2 decide they need to get a house together. This house was decorated with animal skins, skulls, horns, rusty animal traps, leather jackets, old boots, machetes, rakes, and pitchforks.
Okay. Well, at first, when you said the animal skins and skulls and stuff, I'm like, that's every house in the South. Okay, I get that.
Yeah, but then... What? Plus, I mean, I just bought a stuffed chameleon named Fred, so, like, I'm not one to talk. But no, when I say decorated, I mean this house was covered. And in another League reference, it was T-W, top to bottom.
Oof.
Yeah, it just, it, gross. So, like, police who walked in, like, who searched this home... didn't know what to make of it. They call it a house of horrors.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yep. So after an argument, she hit Saunders in the face, then stabbed him in the stomach with a pair of scissors.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So after this, he moved back to his apartment. Some more. Mm-hmm. And he eventually did return home to gather some things, but discovered she'd cut up and burned all of his clothing. Like, bitch, Leave the clothes.
Yeah, just.
What are you doing? They're not important.
Not at all.
But anyways, this act, not the dog, not the pan to the head, or the scissors to the stomach, caused him to go into hiding.
Okay, enough was enough. All right.
Yep, apparently the clothes is where he draws the line. That was a really expensive cashmere. And now I'm just picturing David from Schitt's Creek.
That's what I was picturing, too. That's cashmere.
But I need the cedar chest making toolkit. Okay, this is a fun episode. I like this. He did end up coming back several months later to see his daughter, and ever the victim, Knight then had him served with a restraining order because she was afraid of him.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't buy that. So about 2 years later, she became pregnant with the child of former coworker John Chillingsworth.
Jesus.
Have to stop reproducing, lady. Of course, I know nothing about her children, and they could be lovely, lovely people. Don't at me.
But there is a chance that they're not.
I don't know. Ugh. So she had her fourth child and first son in 1991. Her relationship with Chillingsworth lasted 3 years until she left him for a man she was having an affair with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she has a big thing about being cheated on, but she's good with doing it herself.
I see that.
Ain't that always the case? So this man was John Price, otherwise known as Pricey. Price was a father of three when their affair began. He was said to be a terrific bloke by all who knew him. Except for maybe his wife, I presume?
Yeah, I would think so.
Like, as the daughter of a dirtbag who is a cheater, I 100% believe his wife and his children did not agree he was a terrific guy.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
But I have no quotes from any of them, so again, don't at me. Price has been described by friends as hardworking and hard drinking, but not a violent guy. While his youngest child stayed with his ex-wife, his two older children lived with him. Surprisingly enough, Price's children apparently really liked Knight, and despite his knowledge of her violent behavior, she moved into his home in 1995.
Okay.
Now, this sentence was found in every single article I read, the show that I watched. And I think it's the most absurd sentence I have ever heard. Okay. All seemed to be going well at first, right as roses, despite violent arguments.
Oh, right as roses. Okay.
But what? All's going well, but they do have these violent arguments. But let's just forget about that. Everything's great.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay.
Yep, so I just needed to share in my incredulity at that. It was just ridiculous. So, so in 1998, a fight ensued. Knight wanted to be married, but Price refused. Because of this, she decided, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to send a video to Price's boss. Yeah. So this video showed a first aid kit that she had claimed Price had stolen.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh. Now, in America, what he did would be considered stealing, even though it's ridiculous. So the items were actually expired and mm-hmm. had been salvaged from a work dumpster.
Oh, yeah. That would definitely be stealing.
Yeah. It was a first aid kit for starters, and it's just, it's ridiculous. So regardless, because of this video, Price lost the job he had had for 17 years.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah, but so he was helping fund their lifestyle. So this just kind of shows that she was willing to harm even herself if it allowed her to get even.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So now, obviously, Price completely overreacted and kicked her out.
Yeah, that's a total overreaction. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but unfortunately, this development did not last. So a few months later, Price reinitiates the relationship. Wish he hadn't. Yes.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yep. So at this point, most of his friends stop having any involvement with him. So long as Knight's in the picture, they're like, I don't want any of this. We don't want to see you. He actually had to switch which bar he would go to because, yeah, none of them would have anything to do with it. They're like, this is stupid. You're dumb. She's dumb. No.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I can blame them either.
Yeah. I would be like, yeah, I don't want this bad juju in my life. Get out of here. So in February of 2000, another argument ensued. In this argument, Knight actually stabbed Price in the chest.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
She then called the police on him and states that she had been terrified for her life because he was abusing her.
Oh my fucking God. Okay.
Yeah, so the police grant her a restraining order. This just has Johnny Depp vibes all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Also, I did not believe that story for one second because Johnny Depp is a sweetheart and no. Anyways, off topic again. I got like no sleep last night, guys. I get really off topic when that happens. So obviously this whole her having a restraining order out against him thing just doesn't sit right with Price. So on February 29th before work, he heads over to the magistrate to tell the true story and have the record reflect that. He then goes to work and tells several of his coworkers that if he isn't at work tomorrow, they should call the police because Knight killed him.
Oh, God.
Yeah, now if that isn't a sign that things are not well at home, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So these coworkers then begged him not to go home. But, understandably, he said that he feared for the lives of his children if he didn't.
I get that.
Yeah. I don't have kids, but I, like, if it were my little sister in the situation, 100%, I'm there. I don't care.
Same.
Price returns home to find that Knight isn't there, and neither are his children. She had apparently sent the kids to a friend's house for a sleepover, so thankfully she did not off them. Right?
Oh, God.
Relief. So with that taken care of, he headed over to his neighbor's house and was there talking and drinking until around 11 p.m. Now, before leaving this neighbor's house, he also told them that if his car was in the driveway when this neighbor left, that he should call the police.
Okay.
Keep in mind, Price was always the first one to work, so it'd be really strange if when this neighbor left, Price wasn't already gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so for some reason, he decided to go home after all of this, even though he knew his kids weren't there, which is where I kind of just get confused. But that's neither here nor there. So while Price had spent that day going to the magistrate and filling his coworkers and neighbors in on what was happening, Knight was handling her own personal matters.
Oh, God.
She had gone to the store and bought a new black negligee.
Oh, yuck. Okay.
I know, gross. So she also made a strange video. She had videotaped all of her children while also discussing her personal property. Mm. If this doesn't give you Susan Powell vibes.
Yeah.
Like almost reversed.
Mm-hmm.
This video was later interpreted as a crude will by investigators. Shocking.
Yeah, this is about to get real bad, isn't it?
Yeah, we're right on the precipice of just really graphic gore, so either prepare or skip ahead, you guys. That evening, Knight returned home after Price had gone to bed. She watched TV for a little bit. One source said she'd watched Star Trek, so fun fact, maybe? She then showered and woke Price for sex. After this, she allowed him to fall back asleep. But what came next would be far less pleasant. Okay, so the morning of March 1st, 2000, Scott Matthews, general duties officer, receives a call from the boss of John Price. He hadn't shown up for work. Now, Scott Matthews actually knew Price, and he was well aware of his work ethic, you guys. Oh, my gosh. But he was well aware of his work ethic, and he knew he wouldn't just miss a day. So the police go to investigate immediately and find that Price's van is still in the driveway.
Ooh.
Yeah, after trying to get the attention of anyone who might be in the home, the two spot blood on the doorframe.
Oh, no.
Yes. They then peek through the mailbox, trying to see if they can spot anyone, but they aren't able to see anybody. However, they do see a really oddly placed curtain blocking a good portion of their view.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not going to like any of this. So it's at this point that the officers decide that they will need to break into the home. So they break in through the back door behind this curtain that they had seen. So one officer pushed the curtain aside with his left hand and felt an instant cold wash along his arm.
Oh, God.
Upon examining his arm, he saw that it was covered in blood.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yep. Initially, the officer thought that he'd injured himself in the act of breaking in, but quickly realized that what it was much, 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 much worse than that. So, this curtain that he had pushed back was actually a human pelt.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, can you imagine being the officer that had to touch that?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, the crimes that shocked Australia, crimes that shook Australia, they actually had the officer who did this. And just the look of trauma on his face was just horrible.
Is he still an officer?
I believe so.
Oh, that would have ruined it for me.
Oh, yeah, no, I'd be like, I quit. Pension, mm-hmm. Please. As they got further in, they discovered a skinless body missing its head and genitalia.
Oof.
Yep, the two officers then searched the rest of the home for a suspect when they heard what sounded like moaning coming from the back bedroom. Oh. Now, in this room, they found Knight. She was groggy and unresponsive, but, strangely, not at all injured.
Hmm, okay.
It was later determined that she'd taken a concoction of various drugs, most likely in an attempt to end her own life.
Hence the videos.
Yes. So, the police called for an ambulance immediately, obviously recognizing the signs of drug overdose, and were actually unable to speak tonight for 5 whole days while she recovered.
Okay.
Yeah. So, this part is just really gross. One forensic investigator on the scene described a sweet aroma as if your mom was cooking stew.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just having flashbacks to, I think, yeah, to episode 1, where I was like, human soup. Ew. As investigators searched the premises, the rest of the story became very clear. So that night, John Price awoke in what the world can only assume was sheer terror. She'd stabbed him while he'd been sleeping, and blood patterns in the home show that he had run and began stumbling, falling, and dragging himself out of the home as she continued to attack him.
Oh, goodness.
Crime scene photos and the tape that I watched show that there was blood everywhere. There was blood on the light switch from when he tried to turn it on in the bedroom, on the carpets, the walls, the bed, plus the giant pool of blood under where she had his skin hanging.
Oh, ew.
It, believe it or not, it gets worse. So blood on the screen door and door frame indicate that Price had actually made it to the front door before being dragged back inside the home and finished off by Knight.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so John Price had been stabbed at least 37 times in the back as well as the front of his body.
Jesus Christ.
And several of these wounds punctured vital organs. So the forensic investigator actually said that even if he had made it out front, he would have died long before he was able to receive any help.
Oh my God.
Yep. And as bad as this was, it only gets worse. That's just my catchphrase, you guys. I love when things get worse. So Knight, what with her background from the slaughterhouse, then skinned her boyfriend. She took off all of his skin, including his face, ears, scalp, neck, and genitals.
Oh my God. She did that like in one, like.
In one go. Ooh. They said it was the most professional skinning they had ever seen of anything.
God, what a compliment.
Truly. I mean, she took it as one, that's for sure. She removed all of his skin, except for one small inch. The skin that was left was the scar from where she had stabbed him in the chest.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I have no idea what that says about her psyche, but it is nothing good.
Mm-mm.
She then hung this skin pelt where the authorities would have the misfortune of touching it, as you saw.
Ooh.
Or heard, rather.
Gross.
Yep, so now that they've apprehended their suspect and they know that the premises is clear, the forensic investigators are able to do a more thorough search of the premises. So the first main question anybody had was, well, where's his head?
Yeah.
Now, of course, this wasn't really a question to them, because when they did their initial search through the house, there was a pot on the stove.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah. What the initial police officer, there were two of them who went to do the initial investigation or wellness check, rather. And one of the two police officers had actually said, one guess where the head is.
What?
Yeah. So that was just a little fun tidbit. I felt like because I had to hear it, you guys did. His head was found in a pot on the stove with various vegetables.
Ugh.
And on the kitchen table were two untouched meals. The meat on these plates were later determined to have been taken from his glutes. At this point, just for levity, I wrote dad ass dough.
Ew. Gross.
Another meal was found in the backyard, just like thrown out. The theory behind this one was that Knight had been unable to consume this meal herself. Although my question here is, I found no mention of if they ever found his genitalia.
Oh my God.
So I have a feeling we know what she ate.
Ew! Oh my God.
Yeah. So, I've had some really weird dreams the last couple of nights, you guys.
Ew.
So, there were two untouched meals on the table containing two steaks each and some vegetables. So, these two plates on the table were left with spiteful notes for both of Price's children. So, apparently, she'd intended that at some point his kids would actually eat these meals. I don't know what exactly changed in her psyche that she was like, never mind, I'm not going to clean this up and I'm just going to off myself.
Oh,
but yeah, so she initially, I know, it's real heavy. This is, I don't think it's as bad as the last episode, but it's definitely not better.
Mm-mm.
During an interview with Knight, police immediately knew there was something off with her. She claimed to not remember anything, mm-hmm. but a certain glint in her eye told the interviewing officer that was bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
She had also said that she constantly feared for her life with Price. So maybe if she did it, OJ vibes major, that was why. Once they dug into her past, though, they very quickly determined that was all a lie because of all of the previous incidences I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
there were no instances on record that determined she was the perpetrator or that she was not the perpetrator in any situations of violence between her and her exes.
Good.
So, yeah, they're like, that's bullshit. After word breaks that Knight was being charged with the brutal murder, the town dubbed her the Black Knight of Aberdeen.
Okay.
Which, like, can we please stop giving murderers really cool names? Because yeah. I just think that's added incentive.
Yeah, it just glorifies them.
Like, let's just call her the dumb boyfriend-eating bitch or something. Like, nobody wants that.
No.
So, I don't necessarily know that anyone in the town was surprised that she was being accused of murder at this point. Everybody was very, very, very well aware of her reputation. Though, one close friend of the couple, and this confuses the shit out of me, said that he never thought anything in their relationship was out of the ordinary.
What?
Uh-huh, and that this came completely out of the blue.
Okay, where was he for anyway.
Yeah, like, I understand that a lot of abuse victims will hide what's going on, but, like, towards the end there, Price very clearly told everybody everything that had happened. So what do you mean it came out of the blue and their relationship was normal?
Right.
During the trial, Knight initially pleaded not guilty, but, strangely, eventually did a 180 and pleaded guilty after all. So the presiding Supreme Court judge, Barry O'Keefe, was very, very hesitant to accept this new plea of guilty because he was very, very smart and was concerned that this clearly conniving criminal was going to try and botch the trial by claiming she'd been too insane to properly understand what she'd been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Which is a real thing that happens all the fucking time, and I hate people.
Yep.
So, for this reason, she was submitted to psychiatric evaluations to determine that she was indeed sane enough to make this call. The psychiatrist determined that she was indeed healthy enough, and the guilty plea was accepted. So, she was probably like, plan foiled. Fuck.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Bitch. Yep. The trials continued, and no one could ignore Knight's strange behavior. She refused to even look at the evidence photos or any of the witnesses when they took the stand and was completely impassive.
Mm.
She showed no emotion whatsoever. That is, until Knight was on the stand and the evidence tape was playing. At this point, she began to rock violently back and forth, wailing and falling on the floor.
Bitch, get out of here.
Yeah, so the judge has since surmised that she'd grown tired and wanted an adjournment, so she manipulated her behavior to achieve it.
Duh, I mean.
Which, like, obviously, but come on. In the end, Catherine Mary Knight was the first woman in Australia to ever be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Good.
Yep. Everyone involved said it was very clear that Knight was a danger to anyone who might do anything that she perceived as a slight to her.
You don't say.
Yeah. Super weird. That is the end of that, you guys.
Woo!
My sources were Crimes That Shook Australia, obviously, Murderpedia, All That's Interesting, and ABC News.
Well, that whole story gives a whole new meaning to the whole insult, go eat a dick.
Okay, we just found our episode title.
Ooh, that was a lot.
Yeah, that was something. It's no wonder I tore up my arm in my sleep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, Rebecca, guess what?
What?
I got my Heathen Hippo candle in the mail today.
Really? So did I.
Yeah, so I got the fireside scent, and it is literally my favorite thing in the world right now.
I got my white tea and fig scent, and same.
Yeah, they're amazing. Not to mention, our cute little logo looks so good on the front of this candle.
I 100% agree, and I don't know. I want to send one to everyone.
Same. They're super affordable. They're natural because they're made out of soy.
And because they're made out of soy and they're natural, they burn evenly. There's no lingering smoky smell, and they even use my favorite wood wicks.
Yeah, so that nice little crackle. Oh my goodness.
Especially with fireside, I imagine that would be so nice.
Yeah, it's literally like I'm sitting next to a campfire in my cramped little studio. It's perfect.
I love it. So, guys, if you want one, there are 9 fragrances, 5 customizable font options, or you can get some of their really fun standard label options. They have some Joe Exotic ones that are calling my name. So, if you want to buy some of these adorable, affordable candles, go to Heathen Hippo on Etsy.
And you can use our little code CTKPOD and save 10%.
Yeah, so literally not seeing any reason you shouldn't do that.
So head on over right now, like right now.
Right now, do it.
Okay, let's lighten this just a little bit.
Is it actually lighter? Like, please.
I mean, kind I mean, it gets pretty bad.
All right. Well, I mean, I
Let's
did
be
sign
real.
up for this, so let's.
Okay, so I chose to do my story on the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of this?
I've heard of it, and I think it was on my list of things to cover, but
Sorry.
that dude, you are good. Let's go.
All right, so the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum was built in the mid-1800s by Richard Snowden Andrews. Even though the building was built by him, it was actually designed by a man named Thomas Kirkbride, who would eventually become the superintendent of the hospital.
Oh boy.
The hospital is located in Weston, West Virginia, and sits on, are you ready for this? Exactly 666 acres of land. With 287 acres of that being the 13 buildings on the property. So many say that because of the hospital being made of 13 buildings and the fact that it's on 666 acres of land, it was doomed from the beginning.
I mean, yeah, kind of.
So it is still the largest hand-cut stone building in the country. They had big stones, like hand-cut stones, imported from Germany and Ireland. So it was a pretty fancy building. The
Sounds like
institution,
it.
was to be used as a form of social control over women, immigrants, or other members of the lower class. So that's fun. Building the hospital had immediate effects on the town of Weston, of course. Families came from all over hoping to obtain employment at the hospital or in other forms of increased commercial activity. So the building, like I said, was built from these huge hand-cut stones. It was set to house up to 250 patients comfortably, wow, I guess I can't speak English today either.
Ah, thank you for making me feel better.
With each of them getting their own private room.
Fancy.
The building and the land to build on cost around $395,000 back then,
Ugh.
which today is over $10 million.
Which is nothing compared to what Jeff Bezos just spent on a fucking mansion, but like.
This is a whole ass hospital.
Oh boy, okay.
Okay, so Kirkbride designed the hospital, keeping the importance of fresh air and natural sunlight in mind. He believed these things were imperative as a part of the treatment process for his future patients. So, side note, Kirkbride would eventually found what is now known as the American Psychiatric Association, which is an organization of psychiatrists working together to ensure humane care and effective treatment for all persons with mental illness.
Okay, so I'm gonna guess he did not condone whatever ends up happening in this building.
So
I I don't like that sound. Okay.
So he kind of drops off. He was the superintendent of the hospital, but he kind of turned a blind eye to certain things that happen that you'll see a little later on. So he knew these things were going on, but he didn't really do anything to stop them. I don't really think that's much better, but anyway.
Nope.
Yeah. So most doctors would agree that mental illness came from direct trauma to the head, resulting in brain damage. Mr. Kirkbride actually believed that mental illness could be caused by instability in social order. So he had a little bit of a different way of thinking. He actually believed that mental illness didn't just come from, oh, I just got in this car accident, now I have brain trauma. Because a lot of doctors back then believed you only had a mental illness if you had major trauma to the head. And I mean major, like, you were showing visible signs of this trauma. So Kirkbride insisted his institution have 12-foot ceilings, large windows, and large open hallways that allowed for cross breezes within the buildings. He wanted the building to have a sense of openness. He believed his patients should be allowed to roam freely. He felt that keeping things as normal as possible for them was an extremely important part of his patients' care plans.
Well, it sounds like it should have been a really nice place.
Yeah, and that's what got me, because I was like, okay, this sounds great. What happened?
Yeah, that sounds great. I want to check in there.
Yeah, not so much. So the hospital opened its doors in 1863, and at that time, the name was changed to the West Virginia Hospital for the Insane for undisclosed reasons. Reasons? Yeah, okay. The name of the hospital would actually be changed two more times before shutting down. So you'll hear me refer to this as the Trans-Allegheny, the West Virginia Hospital, the West Virginia State Hospital. So it was changed a few times. There's no reason as to why.
Okay.
But at the end, like when everything was said and over with, they did change it back to the Trans-Allegheny just for tourism purposes. So you'll Makes hear sense. That name a lot. So at the time of opening, grounds included a working farm, a dairy farm, a gas well, waterworks, and an on-site cemetery, which would be used more than expected in the years to come.
Surprise! Yeah. Said no one.
The first patient to enter the hospital was an unnamed female who was committed by her husband for domestication problems and unsatisfactory love.
Men are trash.
Most definitely.
Especially for our followers, you guys.
So she was also a mother of three, and she survived about 3 years in the hospital and then died under unknown circumstances. She just popped up dead one day.
Oh, that's cute. Okay.
Yeah, so that's where it begins. So reasons you could be sent to the Weston Hospital would be excessive studying, which we would both be committed. Religious excitement, laziness, disappointing love, which is female specific. So if you were an unsatisfactory male, there was no such thing. Excessive masturbation, suppressed masturbation, novel reading, right? How does that happen? Opium habits, infertility, hysteria, STDs, epilepsy, a woman disagreeing with her husband, and causing domestic trouble.
Me all the way.
Oh, yeah. I can check off, like, at least four of those, so I would have been fucked.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So, 18 years after opening, the hospital experienced an influx of patients, nearly 500 more than the hospital was equipped for. Because of this, conditions began to decline rapidly. Patients began having to share their living space, sometimes having 4 to 5 patients per room that were originally meant for one patient. So this, of course, left some patients to sleep on the cold, hard concrete floor, Which, who wants to do that?
People who
So,
like camping? Like
so
city camping?
yeah, I don't know. So by 1938, the hospital was 6 times over capacity with over 1,500 patients. By the 1950s, the hospital was over capacity by 10 times what they were supposed to have. So they had 2,600 patients in a hospital that was meant for 250. This is only including the patients. This isn't including the nursing staff, which was, it ranged anywhere from when they first opened, there was about 80 nurses, to the time of closing, there were only about 12. So you got 2,600 patients, you have 12 nurses, and you only have 3 physicians.
That sounds like a good number.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like these classrooms with like 40 students. There's no problem with that.
Nope.
So, word of the extreme overcrowding reached nearby cities, which resulted in reporters flocking to the hospital. One newspaper, the Charleston Gazette, set out to expose the awful living conditions the patients were forced into. Upon investigation, reporters saw patients sleeping on the cold, hard, sometimes wet floor, a lack of furniture, a lack of a heat source, overworked staff, decreased sanitation. The reporters also noted an extreme lack of food and clean water for the hospital, reporting on the malnourished state of some of the patients. So those big, pretty windows that were designed to be a symbol of comfort were now covered in dirt and grime, allowing very little light into the massive building. All of the wallpaper in the building started to crack and decay, which caused most of the patients to start peeling it off of the walls. Patients who were deemed difficult to deal with were locked in small cages, sometimes having more than one patient in these cages, which resulted in many patient deaths. Yeah, and these small cages were about the size of a medium dog kennel. So, if
I'm
that.
literally just picturing the bird cages from Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, well, those were a little more roomy.
Oof.
This is
Okay,
like,
that's horrifying.
I don't know if you guys have chicken trucks on that side of the country,
I mean, I'm sure we do somewhere.
but living in the South, seeing like chicken trucks, pig truck, that's a very common, like, everyday thing. And it's like they were crammed in there like chickens are crammed into a truck.
Yikes.
Yeah, so several forms of treatment were used on the patients. Electroshock therapy was a favorite among the 3 attending physicians, in which electrodes were placed on the temples and a jolt of electricity was passed through the temporal lobes, resulting in convulsions. Duh. So this ended up resulting in confusion and violent outburst, of course. Another form of treatment was hydrotherapy. So, hydrotherapy now is actually a pretty effective treatment, but hydrotherapy back then was a little bit different. So, back then it was also called the water cure.
I don't like that.
Yeah, and it involves the use of water for pain relief and mental treatment. The patients would be made to sit in a bath of cold water for sometimes up to 7 hours. So, yeah. The wet sheet pack treatments were also another form of treatment. This is when they take cold, wet blankets and wrap the body, the naked body. So these cold, wet blankets are on top of your skin.
I,
Them
as a
around the naked
kid,
body of the patient with. Ugh.
you okay?
Yeah.
As a kid, my mom used to like to wake us up in the morning, she would pour ice water on us.
Oh
And
no.
on the days where I was, which were rare, but on the days where I was being difficult, I would literally roll over and just say, fuck it. But like laying in a wet blanket, even by choice, is horrible.
Yeah,
There's a
so.
reason why calling people a wet blanket is an insult.
So they would wrap them in these really cold, wet sheets, and then they would wrap dry blankets on the outside of them. So all that cold water stayed like on top of their skin. Yeah, and the dry blankets were apparently placed on top to regulate body temperature, which I don't really see how that would be effective because the cold blanket is directly on your skin. So I don't really think that was a thing. But anyway.
Yeah, like maybe if it were an electric heat blanket, but it wasn't because those didn't exist then, I'm assuming.
No. And then they would just use general psychotherapy, which most of the time is just like counseling. Like they would go speak to the doctors. And last but definitely not least, well, second to last but definitely not least, were injections of insulin and metrazole, which cause tremors and convulsions. And if anybody knows what it's like to have a spike in insulin, it is literal hell. It makes your body ache. It makes you feel super, super sick. Like it is not fun. So the doctors thought the convulsions that came from injecting this medication woke up the brain, which would help rid the patient of their mental illness. Yeah. So we're inducing seizures to get rid of mental illness. That was a thing.
That's good. That sounds scientific.
Yeah. So the hospital found itself to become the home for the West Virginia Lobotomy Project in the early 50s.
No, thank you.
This was started by Dr. Walter Freeman. The project was started in hopes to reduce the number of patients in asylums because of severe overcrowding. So at the time in the late 1800s, overcrowding was a thing in all hospitals. Because I mean, you got to figure every time a woman, quote unquote, stepped out of line, she was being committed. So, can you imagine how many people were thrown in these asylums?
Considering the amount of people who still think that should be okay.
Yeah. But anyway, that's a topic for another time. So, Dr. Walt Freeman actually performed over 4,000 lobotomies, with about 65% of those occurring at the Weston State Hospital. Dr. Freeman would slip a thin ice pick looking rod into the eye socket of the patient and then take a small metal hammer and smack the base of the rod, severing the connective tissue in the brain's prefrontal cortex. And if you don't know, the prefrontal cortex is in charge of basically anticipation. So if you are in a sketchy situation, that sketchy feeling that comes from your prefrontal cortex. So going through life without those feelings of anticipation could probably be pretty dangerous. So,
Probably, especially as a woman in times that are even worse than times now, where women were regarded as nothing. So, ugh.
Yeah, so not a good thing. So some patients actually left perfectly fine. How? I have no idea.
Magic.
Others, yeah, had to been, or maybe he missed. I don't know. So others experienced extreme physical and cognitive damage or death, which arguably could be worse. Yeah, so the only part of the hospital that grew to accommodate the patient number was the graveyard. The patients were buried, and their graves were adorned with small headstones showing only their patient number. Over time,
Cheating.
yeah, right? Over time, the headstones were actually removed and repurposed for what I couldn't find it, leaving no way to identify where all these bodies are located on the grounds.
That is horrifying.
Yeah, so they know there were multiple cemeteries. The one that they started with filled up fairly quickly. I've read things that said there were up to four. I've read things that said there were as many as six. So there are literally thousands of bodies just chilling in the land.
Great.
Yeah, so here comes the spooky stuff.
Ooh.
In 1884, the first of many patients' deaths were recorded. 19-year-old Jane Harvey lived on the second floor on Ward B. At this location, many visitors have had contact with an entity named Jane. Visitors have complained of pressure on their chest, a strangling sensation. Jane's presence brings on a bitter chill in the air. She also is known to cause spikes on K2 meters. She has also been recorded on EVPs telling investigators to get out or I'm going to tell on you.
I hate all of that.
Mm-hmm. So there have also been random screams recorded from her room. So Jane actually took her own life from hanging herself from the rafters in her room. This is my favorite part. Visitors have felt something brush against their shoulder, and upon looking up to see what it is, they see her body hanging from the ceiling.
Nope.
Yeah.
Okay, I know what I'm going to be tearing into my arm about while I sleep tonight. Thank you.
So...
Nope. I turned it into the Haunted Mansion entrance. I think I'm good.
Okay, good. So, William or Billy Cook was a resident on Ward 5 and Ward 3. After being committed for 1 year, he took his own life on August 23rd, 1891. Sorry. He actually died of shock after turning on the hot water in a bathtub and jumping into it, scalding most of his body. He was described as intensely demented, which you kind of have to be to do that. His ghost often communicates via flashlight sessions. I cannot talk tonight. Oh my goodness. Mostly on the second floor, which is Ward 5, and the third floor, which is Ward 3, centering around the shower room. He also produces loud bangs, rolling, and dragging noises, which, and the sound of footsteps through water. Yikes. So, Larry Carroll was admitted on multiple occasions, the last time being in 1941. He only had an eighth grade education and suffered from various mental illnesses, which caused him to exhibit violent behavior towards others. Larry was arrested in connection to the murder of a 15-year-old boy. Larry killed this boy while he was on his way back from church going to his grandmother's house. The boy's body was found in a cave. He was beaten and then buried alive. Larry is usually found on the fourth floor where he keeps company with another ghost named Frank. Contact with Larry has an unfriendly tone. I mean, duh. And he's known to throw objects at visitors.
I would, too. Get the fuck out my house.
I know.
I don't want you here. I did not invite you.
Mm-mm. Didn't you hear what I did to that little boy? So, Jesse Albright died on July 14th, 1949, after living in the hospital for over 7 years. He died from dementia, and his extended family claimed his body, but he was taken and buried on the grounds in the third cemetery. Jesse's ghost is reported as a talker who likes to whisper in guests' ears, which, he is known to answer to his name, and he also likes to communicate by flashlight and K2 meters. He is also known to drain batteries and any electronics brought to the hospital.
That's good.
Super
interesting. So you won't have a cell phone to call for help.
Right, and no flashlight, and no. So... 46-year-old George Edward Bodie was beaten to death by 29-year-old David Michael Manson in 1992. In 1987, Manson was also charged with first-degree murder along with another unnamed patient. This murder was of Dean Metheny, who was 49 years old at the time. Mason and another patient first attempted to hang Dean, and that didn't quite work out. So when that didn't work, the two men placed his head under his bed frame and began to jump on his bed until the leg of the frame that was initially on the top of Dean's head touched the floor, which means the leg of the frame went through his head.
Nope.
Yeah, so Dean was found with his skull crushed, bone fragments, brain matter, and a whole lot of blood littering the floor of his room. Dean's ghost can be heard screaming for help and crying in his room.
Yeah, that's worse than the frying pan thing for sure. Ugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The same year of Dean's murder, they found a random decomposing body. Oh my god. And later found out this was Brian Scott B. He was actually discovered in a part of the hospital that was under construction at the time, but his cause of death was cited as suicide. It doesn't say, like, if there were any injuries to the body. I just thought it was kind of strange that he was found in a part of the hospital under construction.
Yeah.
And he was missing for about a year before they found his body, so I don't really know about that, but... his ghost can be seen. That's apparently one of the first ghosts you encounter, and he just likes to tap people on the shoulder. Yeah. So this next woman was listed under a few different names. Her first name's always Gladys. I seen it as Gladys Gravestone. I seen it as just Gladys Graves. So I went with Gladys Gravestone because I thought it sounded cooler. So, she was actually committed to the hospital after being raped by a group of Union soldiers during the Civil War. And this happened pretty regularly. One of these instances actually resulted in a pregnancy. So, she was committed to the hospital because she went crazy after being raped just all the time. Which, I mean, who wouldn't?
Fucking obviously.
Excuse me. She gave birth to the baby and her name was Lily. So some records show she named the baby Lily. Some records show the hospital staff named the baby Lily. Jury's still out on that one. So the staff quickly took her and began to care for her. Some stories say she only lived a few hours. Others say she lived for a couple of years. People who see Lily's apparition say she seems to be around 4 years of age, so I'm gonna go out on a limb and say she probably lived for a few years, only because I've never really heard of a ghost aging.
Yeah.
So, we'll say she's four.
Sounds good to me.
She can be seen in her room, and she is the most active spirit. If you bring her candy and toys, she'll play with the toys. Visitors have also reported the candy they leave for her just disappearing in front of their faces. She likes to play with the little rubber racquetballs, and she'll bounce them on the floor. She'll roll them to you. She likes to play with little toy cars and baby dolls, of course. And she is also known to grab the hands of unsuspecting female visitors.
I suddenly remember this story.
Yeah, so...
That's just so sad.
It is really, really sad. So there have been countless stories of women walking in and they'll just feel like they stuck their hands in ice water. And as soon as it happens... it'll go away. It's just like a split second kind of thing. But what they did say is once the female seems like shocked that, you know, her hand just got really cold, they'll hear giggling. So she knows exactly what she's doing.
Which, like, good on her. At least she's having fun with
it. I know. That's what I said. She's enjoying her candy and her toys. She's having fun. She's having a great time. So another ghost is named Ruth, and she was a lobotomized patient. You can actually hear her screaming in Ward 4. And when I say screaming, the EVPs I heard of this is like a bone-chilling, high-pitch, like, wail. It is super creepy.
Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, and it's just random. Like, people will be walking through the building, and she'll just... scream. It is said if you call her name, she'll shove you. People have been pushed so hard from behind, they have fallen forward. People have also been hit in the face with unexpected closing doors, which, from what I read, the doors that are still attached are really hard to move because the hinges are rusted. So the amount of force it takes to push one of these doors is a little crazy.
Yikes.
So she's hit people in the face with doors. She's also known to trick people. She is not a fan of men at all.
Understandably.
Yeah. On several accounts, she's left scratches across men's backs and faces. She's known to pull their hair. She's known to call them names. So, yeah, she's not very friendly. And the last ghost that there are a few reports on is a former boxer. They didn't have a name for him, but apparently he was an extremely unruly patient, and whatever his mental illness was caused him to have severe violent outbursts where he would throw his furniture around his room. He would attack the orderlies. There was even a story about him jumping across the desk at one of his physicians. So he was pretty angry, and apparently he was a pretty big man.
Might I suggest that he probably got hit in the head one too many times?
Yeah, I could see that. I'm getting some Aaron Hernandez vibes from that. But anyway, so apparently all of this uproar caused him to be placed in solitary, where he began to beat down the metal door and rip it off its hinges.
Fucking yikes.
And apparently these doors weighed upward of 300 pounds, so this had to be a pretty strong man. So after he ripped the door off his hinges, he proceeded to try to attack orderlies before he was injected with a lethal dose of morphine. The door that he ripped off the hinges is actually still in the solitary cell where he was kept, which is just, oh, but anyway. In that cell, you can hear him yelling and banging. A paranormal investigation team actually went in there and recorded an EVP that said, "You will die now."
What?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And speaking of the EVPs, I did hear several. And the ones that were my favorites were the various screams that came from Ruth that were just bone-chilling. There are a bunch of random ones that are like, these groups will come into the hospital and they'll be completely quiet. You know how, I don't know if you've ever recorded EVPs, but normally you'll ask a question and then you give it a little bit of time so whatever can respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of them that they'll be like, "What is your name?" Or, "Can you tell me how you died?" And you'll just hear, "Ah! Ah!" Like, no louder than that. No different tone. So, I don't know. But
she's probably sick of having to answer the same stupid
question. I know. Well, she's probably like, "Next, please."
Boy, bye.
Yeah, they do have several ghosts that will just straight up say, "Fuck off."
Me.
Yeah, right? Can you just leave me alone?
Like, I'm trying to watch Netflix, okay?
Yeah, so they've been told to fuck off. The "You will die now" apparently is said a lot. They've heard things like, "Help me," "I'm gonna hide now." Just random noises. There's a lot of like banging and like slamming of doors and stuff like that, which then again goes back to, like I said, those really heavy ass doors.
Yeah.
So if I find clips that I can insert, I will definitely insert them here. If not, I will link them in the description so you guys can be as freaked out as I was.
Yay!
Well, my sources for this were Wikipedia, RoadUnraveled.com, AllThat'sInteresting.com, AsylumProjects.org, ResearchRepository.West Virginia University, and that was a paper done by Kim Jacks, WhatTheFuckWonders.com, and various YouTube videos. So yeah, apparently you can plan to visit this hospital. You can spend the night. It costs $100 per person.
No, thank you.
Yeah, they do offer paranormal tours as well as historical tours, which I would love to do both. The historical tours are held in the daytime, and then the paranormal tours are, of course, held at night. I would really like to do both of them. But I'd have to have a pretty decent sized group of people, and I would have to be right in the middle of them.
Yeah, I would have to bring my like 6'5" tall dude friend.
Yeah, 'cause ooh, no thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you. Wow. Well, thank you for that gem of a nightmare inducer.
Yeah, well, you had to put the image of human skin hanging from my ceiling in my head, so you're welcome.
And you're welcome. Also, you're welcome to you listeners out there. And sorry that this episode ended up being over an hour and a half long.
Oops.
I just didn't feel like any of the information in my story could be left out and still give you a complete picture of that level of crazy. So.
Yeah, hopefully you guys enjoy the longer episodes. I enjoy the longer episodes. I think the more detailed we can be, the better. So make sure you guys let us know if this is the type of thing you enjoy. It won't be an all the time thing, but maybe once a month we can do an extended quote unquote episode like this.
Maybe, or if you just want extra content, you can also now sign up for our Patreon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would just be patreon.com/ctkpod. So if more episodes, longer episodes, whatever sound interesting to you, those would be where you could possibly get more of them. Also, if having me and Katie go to spooky places that we might die at sound fun to you, that would be a good way to make that happen. Yeah, I'm sure neither one of us are a fan of the might die at I added in there, but you know.
Yeah, no, not a fan of that. But I mean, anything for the listeners, I guess.
Anything. Everything we do is for you.
Yeah, that is for sure.
All right. So, Katie, I already know your story, but what chilled, thrilled, or killed you this week?
Okay, so this has been a tough week for me. I mentioned at the beginning of the episode about my allergic reaction, and that actually came from bleach. I have a little bit of an allergy to bleach, and the reason I was using it is because I have a litter of puppies currently, and one of them actually contracted parvo. I don't know how or where. We're pretty good about keeping their little areas as clean as possible. They don't really go around other dogs. So I'm kind of freaking out about that. She's currently at the vet overnight, and I came home and bleached absolutely everything. Because I started to freak out about my other dogs. I currently have 9 dogs in my home, including the puppies. So I'm pretty attached to every single one of them, and the thought of anything happening to them freaks me the fuck out. So that definitely about killed me, has got me chilled to a point where I don't want to be chilled anymore. So that's what's been going on with me. What are your chills, thrills, or kills for the week?
My life is relatively boring, as I have stated previously, because of the whole California still being mostly closed down thing. Thank you, Newsom. I mean, like, I get it and whatever. Not the topic of this, not getting into politics, whatever. But so, aside from all of that, when I have really bad bouts of anxiety, I will actually claw the shit out of myself while I'm sleeping. And I apparently did that last night. Or not last night,
Fun.
the night before, because I didn't sleep last night. Duh. But yeah, so I have this lovely nail-shaped scab on my arm. And Katie over here is like, "Are you sure it wasn't a demon?" And so now I have that in my head, which is really cute. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Otherwise, it's honestly just been a really wild ride. We have over 400 followers in our Facebook group already. We have way more listens than I honestly ever expected us to get.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just amazing. It's been such a ride. And it's only been like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it is. It's just, thank you guys for listening. It's been interesting. We started this with the intention of just putting content out. It was something we both enjoyed, something we wanted to do to kind of get our mind off of things. And we just kind of said we would see where it went. And it's doing better than we expected and faster than we expected. So thank you guys.
Yes, so much faster. Like, so Katie and I actually, it was really funny. We got down on ourselves the other day where we're like, I don't feel like we're doing well, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we both started, we thought we'd maybe have 20 followers.
Yeah.
And we had well over that, but we're both so hard on ourselves about so many different things that we were just like, we're failing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you guys are really quick to give us a nice little kick in the ass when we need it. We definitely always appreciate the feedback. We've definitely taken that into consideration as always. And of course, the reviews, if you listen on iTunes, those are a great way to have our podcast show up to other listeners, let other people find us. So if you're listening on Apple Podcasts and you would like to leave us a review, please, please, please do so. We definitely appreciate them. We love reading them.
Oh, yes. My ego needs it.
Yeah.
They're really great on my really bad anxiety days where I just get super down on myself and I'm like, everything I do is wrong. Mm-hmm. And then I read them and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you guys have enjoyed this episode, hopefully, I know it's really long and you enjoy what we do, please go ahead and find us in our Facebook group where we interact with all of you as frequently as possible. I stay up way too late trying to do so. And you can find that at
CTK Podcast.
Yes. Or you can find us on our Twitter at
CTK Pod.
Or our Instagram at
CTK Pod.
Yes. And if you, again, really want to support us so that we can keep doing this, maybe even do a better job at it, get better equipment, help Katie pay for her little baby puppy's vet visits, please feel free to find us on Patreon. That would be patreon.com/CTKpod.
Mm-hmm. And also, you guys work on getting those stories to us so we can start reading them on the show. And you can send those to us at chillsthrillsandkills@gmail.com. Make sure you put in the subject line, listener story or something like that, so we know what it is for.
Yes, we want to do listener stories so bad. Some of the shit you guys send in or have experienced is so wild, and we want to be able to give you 2 listener episodes a month, but we can't do that without you. So please, 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 please send those in. Again, our email is chillsthrillsandkills@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, until next time, guys.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.